Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. I can feel it coming in the air tonight, too. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on Suspense Radio tonight. I am your host, John Robb, and I have a special guest co-host tonight. I have star Raina on the phone with us. She's going to be co-hosting. Matt is out of town. But I'm telling you, we got a great show for you tonight. We're going to have authors J.T. Ellison and Stephen James on the line, so get ready for that one.
Hey, John, great to be here. Thanks for that warm welcome. Tonight we're also going to have our book reviews of the week, and please don't forget about our very popular segment, the Suspense Smackdown. Or tonight on that we're going to have looking into your soul and seeing what book scared people the most. It's going to be between The Exorcist and Jaws. Both books have made a very lasting impression on a lot of readers. I'm sure everyone is familiar with that. So go ahead, grab a drink. Sit down, and we're going to start the show right now.
All right, everyone. Well, welcome again to Suspense Radio. Let's cap a little bit of what happened on Tuesday's show, because we had Sheila Lowe talking about her last book here, or her last release called Last Rites. And we also had Donald Alan Kirch on talking about Manchester House and a lot of other spooky stories that he's got going on. And so we had a lot of fun on Tuesday. A very popular show. It seems to be gaining in popularity, which is great to see everyone coming out and listening to our fabulous authors and, you know, kind of get a little insight into who they are outside of the book, which is always extremely popular to do, to kind of maybe get a little sense of behind the scenes of who they are. But I want to go in right now and go to let everyone know that if you want to call in on the show and you want to ask Stephen or JT a question tonight, the phone number to call is 877-666-9320. So you can call in at 877-666-9320, or you can log on to the chat window. You can get on there. You can type your questions, and, you know, we'll read as many as we can. Sometimes we can't get to everybody, but we sure do try. So let's go ahead right now, and Star, I know you got some books that you want to talk about that are either coming out on the horizon or have just recently come out. So why don't you share with us what you have?
Great. Actually, the two that I have tonight have already been released. Two really good books. First one was released in May, and it's Fever Dream by Preston and Child. Great book. Great, great book. If you want a thrilling ride with some hazardous developments, go ahead and read this book. It's unending with just mind benders that'll tantalize you. So that's the first one that I have, John. The second one is one that's called Silent Scream, and that's by Linda LaPlante. That was released just in July. Another good book. It's a very procedural story, and she's a British writer, and she shows some very impressive investigative skills throughout the entire book. So it is a must-read, in my opinion, as well. So those are the two books I have. John, what about you?
Well, I'll tell you, I am one of those trifecta people. I just, very difficult for me, again, to stick with one or two. So I'm going to go with a couple female authors here right out of the gate. And we have Veil of Night coming out by Linda Howard. Now, Linda is a suspense romantic writer, and she's probably one of the top of the field coming out. And her book is going to come out here on August the 10th. And we've read this book. It's come out with fabulous reviews. In fact, we're going to have, we have the review here coming out, I believe, in the September issue. And so, you know, she's been doing this for a long time, Linda has, and she just continues to just keep pushing and pushing and pushing the bar on herself. And Veil of Night is definitely no exception, so you want to check that one out. The next one I have here is called The Echo of Violence by Jordan Dane. Now, our review of this was, you know, simply put right here at the top because we kind of said that it's a red-hot mixture of fiery characters and volatile conflict. So anybody who's kind of looking for, you know, that kind of mixture back and forth between characters kind of going in there, you definitely want to check out The Echo of Violence here by Jordan Dane. Now, the last one I have is something that's very special, and I really enjoy these books because Galaxy Press here in Hollywood, their website is called goldenagestories.com. And what they've done is they've taken the Pulp Fiction stories from the 30s here, over 100 of them that were written by L. Ron Hubbard that were in many magazines, like Thrilling Detective, this one was. It's called Dead Men Kill, and they have re-released these books that you can get in subscription form. And the other great thing they have is that with every book, they have an audio version that comes, and it's a great production that goes on in this thing. So it's not just an author sitting here reading his book or someone else reading it. Every character is a different voice. The production is great. We've actually seen them live here in Hollywood put on their show. And if anyone is in town, I suggest that you come and you check this out because they have some really great actors that perform these shows. So I would go to goldenagestories.com and check out Dead Men Kill, along with all the other Pulp Fiction books they have, which kind of brings me into my lead-in here on this is because I'm looking around again, and it's kind of the rant that I like to have is that when you look at the movies that are coming out now, and I'm looking at one just before we got on the show, I looked at this trailer called Takers. And it seems to me that Hollywood has taken the story out of the movie, but the writers continue to put out more and more fabulous books that still get no play into Hollywood. It's all about special effects. It's all about how they can push the limit to their actors on how many cars they can jump over, how many people they can shoot from a distance. But they leave out the humanistic side, I believe, of the approach of the characters that the authors are trying to get into the people as more of a believable thing. Now, Star, I don't know if you have the same.
I absolutely agree with that assessment. Hollywood is Hollywood.
Right, and they're going to do what sells, and I understand. I understand they're going to do what sells.
Exactly. That's exactly what's going to happen. They can take a script of a book and completely rearrange it and leave out parts that are pertinent to the storyline, change the entire storyline. Some, I've heard, they just simply use the title, and the entire story is completely different. So, no, I agree with you.
I'm telling you, our first guest on tonight, Stephen James, he has written a series of books called the Patrick Bauer series, and he has four of them here. He has the first one was The Pawn, then he did The Rook, then he did The Knight, and now he has The Bishop out. But the great thing that Stephen does that had me so captured by his books was not only the storyline that was fabulous, but it was the humanistic approach that he put into his character's depth. And so why don't I just do that? Why don't I just bring Stephen on? And I want to say, Stephen, I want to say thank you so much for joining us tonight because your books do that in such the greatest way, especially Patrick Bauer's. Is the humanistic side that you lay into your stories that give you that sense that you either love them or you're going to hate them, but you still have emotion for them. Is that you're trying to relay?
Yeah, that's awesome. And I appreciate you having me on the show too, John. It's my first time on here, but it's been good getting to know you a little bit over
the
last year.
It is, but it's not going to be the last time, I'm telling you.
Right. Yeah, one of the things when I write, I really believe that a story has depth, not just when you have an external struggle, you know, a problem you're trying to solve, but really an internal struggle, which is a question the character is trying to answer. And that, I think, is what really drives the stories deeper and really helps the people feel that emotional connection with the stories. It's not just watching things happen. It's being a part of the character as that character experiences them and then feeling along with the character the emotions that they feel as they experience this story.
Which makes your character believable.
Yeah. Well,
exactly.
Hopefully it is believable, yeah. You know, and one of the secrets to writing fiction is even if something's impossible, you've got to make it believable.
Exactly.
Right. Because you build this world, and so you've built Patrick Bowers here now in his fourth book, The Bishop, which, you know, we've loved. In fact, we took The Night last year when it came out and said it was one of the top 10 books of 2009. And without a doubt, The Bishop is probably maybe a little step above what you did with The Night. And I don't know, like we were talking a little off air, I'm like, so do you feel the pressure here now knowing that, okay, now I'm just have to step it up because I'm sure we're going to have the king and the queen coming here because we can kind of get the sense. But, you know, so do you kind of feel that pressure of having to step it up?
I do. When I wrote The Rook a couple of books ago, I remember sitting down one night with my wife. We were having dinner, and I said, I don't think I can ever write a better book than The Rook. I said, I don't think I can do it. And then The Night came out, and reviewers said, okay, this is better. And then now The Bishop came out, and they're saying it's better. And I'm like, no, no, don't do that to me. Because I'm working on The Queen right now, and it's going to be a good story. But, yeah, obviously that puts a lot of pressure on you. But it's the kind of pressure I'd rather have than having someone say, yeah, this book tanked, and he
right.
better do better with the next one. So, yeah.
I think Starhair has a question for you that just came out of the chat room. So the chat room buzzes, I'm going to tell you, and sometimes they give you some nice questions, some weird ones sometimes. So, Star, what do you have from the chat room?
Well, from the chat room, I have a question. Are you a chess player? And is that what was inspired the titles, like what each piece can essentially do on the board?
Yeah, nice question. I've toyed with chess. I'm not a great chess player. But when I was thinking of the series, I wanted a series that readers could look forward to the next book, try and collect the whole series. And you know, other people have done things like that with, like, John Sanford does Naked Prey, Midnight Prey, and all those kind of books. And Sue Grafton goes through the alphabet, and that was a little intimidating to me, but I thought, hey, it'd
right,
be
I
great.
Mean, you're talking
yeah.
26 books that she signed up for on that one.
Yeah, that's a little overwhelming, but this way, readers are already saying, well, what's the next one? It's got to be the king. It's got to be the queen, and so it's kind of neat that you're almost advertising the next book even as people are reading this book, and I just like the idea of a strategy in chess. And, you know, Patrick Bowers, it's always sort of a cat and mouse game between him and catching the killers. And he's always using cutting edge technology to try and do it. And I thought, that kind of brings to mind this idea of cat and mouse strategy and planning, trying to get ahead of the killer. And I landed on the idea. And, yeah, it's been a lot of fun to play it out in each book.
So I was looking over your website also, and we've talked before. If for people who don't know, Stephen and I met for the first time when we were at Thriller Fest, which, again, I have to tell everybody that if you are a writer now, even if you're established, or if you are thinking about being a writer, or if you have one book out, Thriller Fest is a place that you have to go and visit because their first couple of days is what's called Craft Fest, where, Stephen, you actually taught a class. It was, what, 55 minutes? Where you actually got up there and you talked about a subject. And so you're very comfortable in speaking since you've done over 1,500, and I see, you know, engagements, and I see that you're going to India coming up here in the next couple months to go do. So how did Thriller Fest, as an author for you, when you're sitting back listening, how does it keep helping you to listen to other authors in the trade to make your stories better?
Oh, that's a great question. And I had a super time up there. Not only meeting with you, but just a lot of the other writers and stuff. And, you know, when I look at the way I approach writing, there's a certain process that every writer has, you know, whether it's write 1,000 words a day, outline, don't outline, everything like that. Everybody has a different sort of process. But then there's also principles. of storytelling. That are pretty universal, developing good characterization and a gripping plot and all these kind of things. And so I find that when I go there, not only do I get ideas on different processes people do, different tools that I might be able to try, but just a deeper understanding of what makes a story click. And the last couple of years I've been up there, and I'm looking forward already to jogging up there next year again back to New York City.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to be there, so this time maybe we won't go because I think we both got the burger, so we'll have to change. Or did you get a salad? I forget. I forget what you got.
I probably had the burger.
I think we might have jumped into that blue cheeseburger that they kind of had there. So, but that was a great time, and you know we had in your talk we missed it, but we heard actually some people saying how great it was, and so it had to be a fun experience up there and for you to talk too, and that's great, and. We have another question here coming out of the chat room for you. So your books are so varied in the subgenres of thrillers, like psychological thriller, et cetera. What will the queen be? What type of subgenre?
Well, each of the books, you know, would be a psychological thriller or suspense novel, but I do try to go into different subgenres. The Rook was a little bit more of a techno thriller, and in The Queen, there will be sort of that techno thriller aspect to it. There's really not a serial killer in the upcoming book, but it's an assassin, and so it does have a different feel. I kind of, you know, you probably the same with you, John. You read some series, and every book is kind of a cookie cutter of the past one. They just change the names and the love interest and plop them in a different city, and you know, as I wrote the series, I thought I want every book to have a different feel to it so that readers won't feel like, okay, this is just basically the same story, you just dropped it, you know, different place in the country. So yeah, it's a very astute observation, and I consciously set out to try and do that so that each book feels fresh and original.
Right, exactly. There's some authors out there today, we're not going to name any names, but have probably... But we talked about this too, that have probably taken their character maybe too far where, you know what, you just can't go any further. I mean, you know, let's look back at some of the characters where all of a sudden they're president where do you go from there? You know, you're president.
Where to go.
Right. So I'm going to ask the question here from the chat room because there's another one because it kind of leads into this is how far are you going to take Patrick Bowers?
Well, I actually have a contract to do 8 books right now, and I'll keep doing I'll do up to 8 as long as I feel like I still have great stories to tell with this character. But if it comes to a place where I'm just like, you know, he's burned out and I just can't tell anything more with him, then I'll switch to a new series. But we're planning to do The Queen, then Opening Moves, which is a prequel, and then The King and Checkmate would be the final book in the series, number 8. And so at this point, I'm halfway through The Queen, and I just think, man, I love this character. I don't want to see him go. And so I think he has the strength to carry us through 8 books. So that's the plan at this point.
And now the one question that I asked you when we were together, and I have to ask again because you got to tell everybody because it's fascinating, is the candles. In the night... It was the burning candles that was the major clue in the whole book that you kind of set it up. But you got to tell everybody, okay, the story behind that because it's funny and I love it.
Well, you know, I spent the longest time trying to come up with a final clue to have Patrick Bowers unveil everything. And I remember it was 3 days before my deadline and I was still struggling with it. And I realized that I needed to change who the killer was in order to make the story work. And I remember calling my editor, and I said, guess what? This story's going to be better than we even imagined. And she said, oh, yeah, that's great to hear that. I said, I'm going to change who the killer is. And it's a 500-page book, you know, and 3 days before the deadline. And she has this long pause on the phone, and finally she said, well, as long as it's going to be a better book, I trust you. And seriously, it took me a couple more months to make the story play out the way I needed it to. And I was so happy to see that the story came together in the end. But I remember that was that moment where I thought, no, I can't imagine I've got to do this.
Right. And then you said, I think you said that your brother also had like a play in some of the parts that you kind of go with him on some of the details in your book.
Yeah, my brother actually is in the military, and he's a doctor in the military, and his specialty has been, well, he's done some stuff with studied bioweapons and what would happen if we were attacked and so on. And so I'll call him up sometimes and say, hey, I need a good way to get rid of a body. You know, and he'll like, oh, that's easy, no problem, you know. And we're talking on the phone, our wives are like, you got to be kidding me, what have we gotten into? So, or how can I kill someone and get away with it? He's like, oh, that's easy, all you got to do is, he walked me through some great ideas, and so I'll pick his brain sometimes, and it's pretty funny. We always think, what if, like, the NSA is listening in on our phone calls or something like that? And
exactly. You pick up your brother and you say, is this secured line? He goes, yeah, it's secure. And then you start going ahead and talking.
Yeah, exactly.
About your book, and then people start knocking at the door. What are you guys doing? Nothing. It's a book. I swear it's a book.
Yeah, it's like if either of our wives ever disappear, we're going to be in big trouble.
So you mentioned you're going to have the queen, then you're going to have opening moves, then the king, then checkmate, so you got four left. So I don't know if you started thinking about it, but have you life outside of Patrick Bowers, what does that hold for Stephen James?
Well, you know, I've started outlining a new series, and I can't give too much away. It's kind of, right now, it's still in the planning stage. It's a little top secret, but it's going to be more of an espionage series. Then,
don't worry, this line is secure.
So it'll be more of an international sort of espionage spy kind of a thriller than a police procedural investigative book. So I'll jump borders a little bit. And actually, I will reveal this much. I really haven't told anyone, but it'll have to do with a DEA agent who's stationed at an embassy overseas. And yeah, I have a DEA agent friend, and he said at every embassy there's agents stationed. And I didn't know that. And I thought, well, that opens up an awful lot of fun stuff, because the DEA, those guys are pretty tough. They're the real deal, and I thought, this will be fun. So I love Patrick Bowers, and in a year or two, he's going to have a little competition, but I think he'll be able to stand up to it.
So can we say that your trip to India, then, could be a research trip?
Are
you not going to say?
Well, yeah, I will be visiting Hyderabad, India, and I'll be visiting some, I'll be visiting some slums and some orphanages and so on over there, and there will be some scenes in the new book that I will be doing some research on, yeah.
So, my next kind of, and this always comes up when you have such a great character like you do for Patrick Bowers, and then you say, well, you know what, I'm going to take him as far as I can go, and then I'm not going to take him there any further. So have you decided, and you don't have to say if you don't want to, but I'm just curious to know, when you're going to finish him, do you think that there's a possibility that he could die, so then you can say, he's never coming back, people. I've done it, and it's over?
Well, I can't really speculate on that. We'll have to see where the story goes. I think it would be pretty rough to kill him off, to let him die, because I think I need to probably have him walk off into the sunset somehow. But, yeah, we'll have to see. It's an interesting question. I'm still trying to chew through the next scene in The Queen, though. Come on, man. That's going to be a couple years out.
You know, we're just over here just chit-chatting over lunch like we were in New York. So, you know, I'm just trying to see what I can get out. So why don't you go ahead then, and why don't you tell fans a little bit about, we really haven't done too much, so why don't you just tell them, hey, you know, this is what the Bishop's about.
Well, you know, Bowers, he doesn't look for means, motive, or opportunity. He hates profiling and has nothing to do with DNA. So it sets him apart from everybody else who's out there. He uses what's called geospatial investigative techniques. He's studying timing, location, and progression of crimes in order to kind of look at the mental map, the cognitive map of what the killer might have been thinking, and move back to try and find a location where he might have his home base from. And so using all of this really, really kind of 21st century stuff, he in the Bishop, he's tracking a pair of killers who are committing some perfect crimes up in the Northeast. And he stumbles across a political conspiracy that reaches all the way to Congress, and he's probably put to the test more than he ever has been in the previous books, because he can't rely on all of his techniques. He's got to just kind of play it out a little bit differently than he anticipated. And so it's pretty gripping. It's pretty deep, too. Deals with a lot of kind of deep questions about what makes us human. And so those play out in the background all throughout the book.
Well, I got another chat question here for you. And so I'm going to ask this one. And I don't know if you've thought about it since, you know, you're only halfway through The Queen and all. But, hey, any thoughts to take off with any supporting characters into a standalone book?
Hey, great. You know, great question. Some people have asked me about Patrick Bowers' stepdaughter. Her name's Tessa. And
yes.
She's pretty interesting character. A lot of people kind of... Some people don't like her, but most of the fans of the series kind of whisper to me, yeah, she's kind of one of my favorite characters. They really like this girl, and so she's almost ready to go to college. And some people have asked if I could do a standalone with her. Her nickname's Raven. So, yeah, you might in the next couple of years find a book out there called Raven that has to do with her.
You know what? Isn't that still a compliment? Because if no one talks about the supporting character, it's almost then forgettable. But if people come up and say, I don't like that person in your book, then you wrote it correctly, whether or not you were trying to like him or dislike him. You wrote a character that is now non-forgettable.
Yeah.
And that's still important.
Yeah. I've met a few people who are just because of her characterization, they're like, but almost everybody it tells me that they really like this character, but there are other ones that they love to hate. And so I think it is. It's fantastic when you can create an emotional response in readers, whatever it is, whether they like a character, don't like a character, because it means, like you were talking about earlier, they're engaged with the humanity of this character. And that's one of the keys to writing a great story.
So Star has another...
Oh,
go ahead,
sorry.
Star. No. Yeah, I was going to...
Question
do it up.
From chat room. Sorry about that, John. Okay, this one is asked, how does it feel to be compared to a literary Hulk like James Patterson?
Oh, there we go. Let's hear it.
Yeah, well, I've really enjoyed some of his stories over the last couple, over the years. And so obviously it's an honor to be compared to somebody who sold whatever 600 million books. He's obviously a great storyteller, and whether or not you like every one of the books that he puts out there, he knows how to draw readers in. And so, hey, if it'll help me grab that many fans, I'm all for it.
And so when you think about what, you know, just like James Patterson and what Clive Cussler and people might have done, they're starting to write with other people. Do you have, like, let's just say you have a wish here and you could have one writer that you can go ahead and say, let's take a collaboration, let's write together, and let's see what we can come up with. Who would that one author be that you'd just love to just sit down and say, I would love to write with you?
Wow, that's a good question. And no one's ever asked me that before. And let me think about that. I think one of two people, maybe Jeffrey Deaver. I really love his stories, and he's got a great way of crafting stories, and he's really prolific. I think that would be a challenge because he's obviously really gifted and smart in the way that he approaches his tales. Or a guy named Thomas H. Cook. Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he writes kind of some crime dramas and really a wordsmith, really knows how to put sentences together, and I enjoy reading his novels just to see the craft of shaping stories. But yeah, I don't know. It'd be fun, but I've never really thought about doing that. The way I write would be really hard to collaborate. I tend to edit and go back and thrash through stuff, and I think if I worked with someone, they'd just go insane. They'd be so crazy by the end. Don't throw that out. I worked so hard on that scene. No, it's gone. I just throw it away. So I wouldn't have a friend at the end. So.
Well, I'm going to tell everyone right now, we're going to go ahead and we're going to tell everybody – you can find out more information here on Stephen James. You go to Stephen, and that's Steven, James.net to pick up or find out exactly where, you know, more information on all of his books, which the first one was The Pawn, and this is the Patrick Bauer series. So you have The Pawn, The Rook, The Knight, and the newest one, The Bishop, which I'm going to give myself a plug here. The Suspense magazine is on the cover, saying how great of a book it is, and we're not going to steer you wrong. So I know that you can find it in all the bookstores. You can find it on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and all the places. So Steven, it was great having you on. We're going to put you on hold because I know you're thinking about the SmackDown already and about what you're going to do. So, again, everybody, Steven James, S-T-E-V-E-N, James.net. Go check him out. Go on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, wherever it is. If they don't have it, you tell them to come and you tell them to carry it because once you read one, whether you read the Bishop or the Knight or whatever first, you're going to want to read the other ones because you want to know what's going on because his character is one of the best out there right now. So, Steven, it was fabulous. We're going to bring you back, all right? So you just hang on.
All right. Looking forward to the SmackDown.
All right. So let's just move right on in here, and we're going to bring our next guest in. This is JT Ellison. JT, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
You know, we are excited. This is a great time we're having right now. The weather's nice outside, and everything's looking good. And, you know, we have two great guests on, and I know that we want to talk about your book coming out called The Immortals. So can you kind of give, you know, everybody a little sense of what that book is about?
Sure. The Immortals is the fifth book in the Taylor Jackson series. It is a bit of a departure for me. It deals with the occult. And it's not a supernatural book. I know a lot of people have been asking me that. But it is more an examination of one of several of the subcultures that exist in Nashville, the pagans, the Wiccans, the Goths, and the vampires. And Taylor is faced with a very difficult murder that opens the book, and you'll see on the back cover copy there's actually seven in a very short time frame, just a couple of hours. And she has to get a handle on this, get her city back under control, and find who's doing this, all without her right hand, John Baldwin, her fiancé, who is up in Quantico being measured out with some discipline. He's in trouble.
Now, JT, this is Star. I see that we are actually fellow Sisters in Crime members. You're part
of
the Tennessee. Yeah, you're part of the Tennessee chapter, aren't you?
I have been for a long time.
Oh, no. The show is being overrun by women. I am now outnumbered.
It's just like personal
life.
Prepare yourself. I just got back from RWA. I'm still riding it.
Nice.
Now, hey, JT, for maybe some of the listeners who really don't know you, could you tell us just a little bit about yourself? How did you get started writing?
Sure. I wrote in college and really thought I was going to be a writer, you know, with the hubris of a 20-year-old. And one of my professors said, you know what, you're not good enough. And I listened to her, and I quit writing for 15 years, went into politics, ended up in aerospace marketing, you know, an odd little thing. And then we moved to Nashville, and I couldn't find a job, and I went to work. I was so bored. I went to work for my vet's office. I thought it would be just fun to see all the animals. And on the third day, I blew my back out picking up a golden retriever and ended up having to have surgery. And while I was recovering, I discovered John Sanford. And I think I was about three books into the Prey series, and I literally had this thought, and I can't believe I'm going to even admit it. I said, well, if he can do it, so can I, without realizing what I was getting myself into.
Here you are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I never realized how incredibly difficult it was to be a storyteller. Much less to be able to put it down on paper for people to understand and enjoy and have that psychic connection that Stephen King talks about. That took something a little bit different.
I can certainly see that. We know about your character, Taylor Jackson.
Yep.
How did she come about? How did you make up Taylor Jackson?
Taylor made herself up. She leapt fully formed into my mind. I was reading the Sanford books, and I had a sense, you know, I wanted to write a book that was set in Nashville. Obviously, it needed to be forensic-based, police-based. That's what I really enjoy. That's the research that I enjoy doing. And she just jumped into my head, talking in that really low, smoky voice. She's got that kind of Demi Moore voice. with a little Southern accent to it. Nashville doesn't have a really, really heavy Southern accent, but there are certain words and inflections that you there's no mistaking that you're in the South. And she's kind of an embodiment of my own hero complex. She is
really?
What I want to be, absolutely. She's fearless. She's the kind of she's a hero. She would run into the burning building or the burning car and pull the people to safety, save their lives, and then walk away without getting any accolades, without waiting
for
the people.
True. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. That was it.
Oh, I was going to say, so it is really true then that there's always a little bit of the author in the story.
I think there has to be. I mean, we're all nuts.
yeah, I hear you there.
I think it's John Gilstrap. I did a panel with him not too long ago up in Virginia, and he was talking about that writing is controlled psychosis. And he's absolutely right. I mean, if you were walking down the street verbalizing your thoughts that you put on paper, they would throw you in the loony bin. But as long as we paint it on our computers and on paper and hand it in to an editor and they pay us for it, then, you know, we've kind of beat the system, I think.
Yeah, and that if we're walking down the street and we hear our characters talking to us and we're actually answering them, then we have a few problems. Or at least
yeah.
I think so.
Wait a second. Is that wrong to talk to yourself when you're walking down the street?
No. I don't know. John, do you do that?
Absolutely not, yes. So,
I don't know. Every time I go to Thriller Fest, there's always somebody that's wandering down in front of the Grand Hyatt just, I mean, having a really big conversation with somebody that's not there. It's fascinating, really.
And they're not on the cell phone?
No. They're not on the cell phone. It's they're talking to God.
Did that person this year maybe have like a ball cap on and some shorts? Okay, it wasn't me. I'm telling
you. Up there doing well. I gotta save that for later, right?
That's true. But then again, it is New York, so you can find people talking to themselves anyway. So.
This is
true. So true.
Well, I'm gonna jump in. Hold on. Start real fast. I'm gonna get this chat room question in here real quick because
okay,
I got
go
one
ahead.
Here. So it says Taylor is so multifaceted because it's swinging between strong and sexy and so feminine at all times. Is it the difficult balance to keep her so tough in her job?
Well, sure. That's a good question. She, you know, she has 13 years under her belt at this point when the series opens. And she's gone through all of the hazing and all of the problems and being treated like a girl. And I think now she's much more in control of those kinds of emotions. I mean, being a cop, it deadens your emotions, and you have to find ways to deal with it. And some people, you know, some cops drink, some cops get really depressed, some find religion, and some develop a very macabre sense of humor. And that's kind of where she is. And the people around her truly love her, truly respect her. They admire her intellect, they admire her tenacity, and she doesn't have as much trouble as a lot of, you know, female cops do because, you know, she's past that. And it's, I keep her from crying a lot. I mean, there are some things that I write that, you know, if I were faced with that, I would be on my knees sobbing. And she has to stow that away. And I think that's why she and Baldwin get along the way that they do, because they are pretty much the same creature. They both are faced with these horrific shows of what people can do to one another. And they can find solace in each other and know that, you know, there is some good to come of it when they solve the case.
Mm. You know, she is such a fascinating character. Can you actually see her immortalized on the silver screen?
Oh,
have you
sure.
thought about that?
Well, you know.
Well, heck yes, you want some on the silver screen, don't you?
Yeah, you know. so many people have asked me that, and, you know, who would play her, and what do you see, yeah. And, you know, I avoid saying who I think would play her, who I see in my head, because that kind of ruins it, you know. That's, it's very hard to give up creative control of a character that you're still developing, but obviously, if the right offer came along, we've had a couple of offers, and it just hasn't been exactly what I'm looking for. You know, that's one of those things that, you know, my agent and I touch base every once in a while on, and, you know, he knows what we're looking for. I would be interested to see somebody else's view of her, though. That would be kind of fascinating. I've been watching Rizzoli and Isles, and I know Tess, and I'm a huge fan of the book. And I've been putting myself in her shoes, saying, you know, does she like it when they do that? Does she hate it when they do that?
How far off are they from the real character of the book? Yeah, I've been watching Rizzoli and Isles. It's a great show.
It is a great show, and I think once you, especially if you're a fan of the books, you have to just go ahead and sit back and let them do what they're going to do with it, and then you can really enjoy the show. It's just like Dexter. Dexter is different books, but the adaptation is just absolutely brilliant. True Blood, too. True Blood is very different from the books, but they do such a great job bringing it to life. So, sure,
yeah.
I would enjoy Taylor being immortalized like that when it's
I'd
done
love
well.
To see that. Love to see that. Now, I just want to remind everyone, if we've had any new callers jump on, we are interviewing J.T. Ellison right now, and if you have any questions, you can type it in the chat box. Or go ahead and just call us toll-free, 877-666-9320. Go ahead and call us in. We'll put you on the air, and you can ask JT your questions.
Well, guess what? So, I have a chat question here.
Oh, great.
Look at that. See, we got them all going. They come rapid-fire so fast that I have to kind of go through and, you know, kind of filter some of them out. So, JT, here you go. What was it like to have Lee Child mentor you? And what was one priceless lesson that he taught you?
Wow. There were many precious lessons. Lee is a fabulous man. He's a fabulous writer who gives so much to so many writers. I mean, I was blessed to have him my debut year to bounce things off of and ask questions. You know, I don't even know where to begin with all the things that he taught me. He did tell me not to sweat the small stuff, you know, because as a debut, even now, I mean, I'm 5 books in, I'm writing the 7th. I still feel new. I still feel like I'm learning as I go. And that was one of the things he said, just, you know, there are things you need to worry about and there are things you don't, and don't worry about them. And, you know, taught me kind of how to pick my battles.
Don't you feel like you're learning all the time, though? With each new book, you learn something different?
You know, I learn something new about this every single day. It's astounding. I mean, I don't think that there's anybody who knows everything about writing and publishing. And if they are, well, you know what? Patterson probably does. I heard you ask about Patterson. He's got it figured out pretty well. But I bet you even he has moments where an idea comes into his head or the words come together on the page in a way that he didn't expect, and he gets that little thrill up the back of his spine. And, you know, it's that little thunderbolt that comes from on high that goes through us, and it's like, oh, wow, thank you. It's really kind of cool.
That's great. We have a caller here on the line. And I'm going to go ahead and put them on. It's a Romaine from San Antonio. So,
okay.
Romaine, you're on the air. Go ahead and ask your question of JT.
Hey, JT. Thank you so much. You know, when anyone becomes such a great success, I always think back to childhood. And I always think about what was the foundation that was laid early on in life that helped someone become a success. So my question to you is, what kind of games, if any, did you like to play as a child, and what kind of books did you read that sort of maybe formulated your start in life and where you're at today?
What a fabulous – nobody has ever asked me that.
You know what? You only get questions that you've never been asked right here on Suspense Radio?
What a great question. I grew up out in Colorado, kind of in the wilds. We were on a Pikes Peak National Forest. So we're in the woods. There wasn't a lot to do other than, you know, go run around in the woods and climb on the rocks. And I had a couple of friends, and we spent a lot of time in this really cool fort that, you know, obviously there was a lot of make-believe going on in there. We didn't have, you know, the video games and the TVs and the problems that kids have now. You know, our parents kicked us out at 7 and said, make sure you're home for dinner. And, you know, we were gone all day long.
You better be home when the street light comes on, right?
The street light comes on, or, you know, they rang the little bell. My mom had a triangle that you could hear from, God, miles away.
Yeah.
Because we lived, you know, the way everything was set up, we were in a valley in the mountains. So when she rang that thing, man, you could hear it. So, you know, we had so much of our own imagination that we had to tap into to entertain ourselves. So there was a little bit of that. And also, my parents are great readers, and they always encouraged me to read. And I spent, you know, if I wasn't outside playing, I was inside reading. And I didn't watch a lot of TV. Some, Saturday Night Live. I mean, I was allowed to watch Saturday Night Live when I was a kid, little kid, which was great. The Dan Aykroyd days.
Yep.
And so that's, you know, probably where I got the twisted sense of humor. And I loved, you know, Chutes and Ladders. I loved that. And Sorry and Risk and Scrabble. And I think, we had Bongo, and I know we played a lot of cards. My brothers taught me Texas Hold'em when I was about 6. So we played a lot of poker in our house. You know, we had a really good time. I had a very I'm blessed. I had a lovely upbringing with wonderful parents who are still alive and still married to each other, and they let me raid their bookshelves a lot. I think the first adult book I read was Roots. Followed
wow.
by and I was 7, 6 or 7.
Okay, wait, you read Roots when you were 7?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I was a little precocious with the words.
I was going to say, boy, you just didn't mess around, did you? You just jumped right in.
Well, you know, I read all the Nancy Drews. I started reading pretty early.
Right.
So I'd done all the Nancy Drews and the Ramona and Beezus, you know, all that, and it was time for something bigger. Plus, my mom had the Norton Anthology of Poetry, and I read that all the time, too. That was one of my favorite memories, is sneaking into the room and taking that off the shelf and flipping through and, like, memorizing Tennyson when I was 8. It's his birthday, too. Happy birthday, Alfred Lord.
Nice.
You know, hey, JT, I saw that at the end of Judas Kiss, there's a book mentioned called Edge of Black. What happened to that book?
Edge of Black became The Cold Room. We had one of those marketing nightmares that they decided they wanted to change the name of the book. And it had already been promoted. It was actually already up on Amazon with its original cover. And, you know, if you do some pretty intensive Googling, you can find the original Ed Black with its original cover. It went through a couple of covers, and then we changed the name, and it went through a new cover. But it is The Cold Room. It is the same book, just with a different title.
Oh, great. That's good to know. Now, after The Immortals, you have another one coming out, So Close, The Hand of Death. When is that slated to be released?
March 1st, 2011.
Oh, so we can look forward to that.
Yeah.
What's next after that? Are you going to continue on with Taylor?
I am. God bless Mira. They just bought 3 more books.
Fabulous.
I know, and that I just love them. They make me really happy. So I'm working on number 7 right now, which is called Where All the Dead Lie.
Ooh.
And that one is going to be out September 2011. And then I get to work on number 8, and then get back to work on number 9. I already know what they're about. That helps.
That helps tremendously, especially for the reader later on down the road.
Yeah.
Well, JT, I'm going to have to, unfortunately, I'm going to have to kind of segue here into our SmackDown part of our show. But I want to, this is what I want to let everybody know. JTEllison.com, that is your website.
That's right.
And everyone needs to go visit JTEllison.com. You need to make sure that you pick up a copy of The Immortals, which comes out. I probably missed when it came out. I don't have it in front of me. My producer didn't give it to me.
September 28th.
So September 28th, you need to go get The Immortals. We've already read it. We've already reviewed it. So we're going to have it in the magazine closer to the date. And available, of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, local bookstores, JTEllison.com. Check it out. So, JT, we want to thank you so much for being a guest. We're definitely going to have you back. This has been a fun show, and we're going to continue it here with the SmackDown. So are you guys ready? Because here it comes.
I'm already giving you instruction in the dressing room. I expect a tough, clean fight. Protect yourself at all times. We're breaking from the challenge.
Okay, so everybody knows what time it is, so here we go. We're taking two books that resonate in people for a long-lasting time, and we want to know which book resonated with people the longest and continues to do so today. So we have the demonic possession book, The Exorcist, against Can You Go Back in the Water Now, Jaws. So I'm going to go to Steven. Steven, thank you so much for staying around. Which one are you going with, The Exorcist or Jaws?
It's hard. I would have to say the longest running one, probably the biggest impact, Jaws.
Okay.
But I think it maybe came from the movie, maybe, because of the shark music, the attacks going on. I mean, for the longest time, people were afraid to go into lakes, which don't even
exactly.
have sharks.
Exactly.
So yeah.
JT, which one?
I got to go with the same, because I spent my summers at the beach, and I was afraid to go. You know what? I don't think I've really gone in over my head since Jaws. It freaked me out pretty well.
Okay. So, Star, who are you going with?
You know, John, I've got to say The Exorcist.
Uh-huh.
I think that originally came out before Jaws, back in 71, but there's nothing to me like reading about seeing someone being possessed by an ancient demon. I got to say, Exorcist.
Well, I think we're going to team up on you here, and it's going to be 3-1 because I have to go with Jaws 2. And the reason why I'm going with Jaws is just for the simple fact of I think it reached more of a wider audience of people and scared more more people, and I think that's also why you get the big misnomer of now when you watch Discovery Channel and Planet Earth, they have Shark Week, because I think they want people to know what sharks are actually like instead of what Jaws portrayed them to be like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that kind of resonated a little bit to where you want to understand the animal behind it, where, you know, when you're talking The Exorcist and demonic possession, I don't know if you can ever understand something like that because you can't see it or touch it. It just shows up.
Well, it's a phenomena. And, sure. You know, paranormal has always intrigued me anyway, so maybe that's why it's pulling me towards The Exorcist, so long as I'm never possessed, that is.
Well,
no, I heard that in the original Exorcist, they used the actual recording of an actual demon, actual exorcism in the original movie. They used the tape, yeah, from an actual, and that was one of the reasons why it freaked people out so much. Pretty astonishing, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I heard. It's unforgettable.
And JT, some of your books have to do with the occult. Did you ever kind of research back on The Exorcist at all, or no?
You know, I just bought his new book, and I haven't read it yet because I'm afraid of it. the first movie that freaked me out. It was the third. It was the third movie that really got under my skin and made me, I mean, I was scared. I halfway through put my head in my lap and couldn't watch the rest of it. It scared me that bad.
Okay, was it the part where the lady climbs the wall?
No. No, it's the scene where they're at the nurse's station and they check and everything's fine, and then she turns her back and he comes out covered in a sheet.
Exactly, with the clippers, yes, he comes after her.
Look, I just got goosebumps just thinking about it. I'm going to have nightmares tonight. Thanks a lot.
Okay, well, now here's the thing. So did Jaws give you those nightmares that like The Exorcist does? I mean, I know Jaws has been in like 4 different movies, and I know The Exorcist has been in 3, and then I think they did a prequel to The Exorcist back. So, you know, was the movie scarier than the book, or was the book scarier than the movie? That's another tough question.
Well, I know.
That way.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I think The Exorcist falls under that. Jaws, the movies just got silly. So it doesn't have the fright impact that I think The Exorcist. So maybe I'm going to change my mind and say The Exorcist.
Oh, here we
go. I knew you would, JT.
Stephen, isn't it always the thing? The women are coming to each other and the men have to still fight for himself.
Well, we got to stand up for it.
I know, but the chat room is going with Jaws.
Yeah.
So I think the chat room's going with Jaws just because, you know, maybe when that movie came out, like I said, I think a bigger audience watched it where The Exorcist might have been a little bit too horror for people. And maybe they saw it when they were, instead of 10, when about 7 years later when they were 17. But I think today's day and age, I think either one of them, when they come on, I think now people won't even think it's scared because you have all the, you know, saws and everything else. So we're gonna pick this one for Jaws this week. And
are we sure about that? We've got the chat board.
Yeah, well, the chat
board
says Jaws. No.
Yeah,
you know,
it says Jaws
remember,
is only Star, scary.
Remember, though, we live in California, and you do have to go to the beach. So you just keep on your mind.
That's true.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I want to thank Stephen James, and I want to thank JT Allison for coming on the show for us. I'll tell you, guys, it's been great. I want to thank you so much for coming on. Again, StephenJames.net, STEVEN. Check out his book, The Bishop, along with his 3 other in the Patrick Bauer series. Go to JTEllison.com. Pick up her book, September 28th, The Immortals. Check out her information when she has The Cold Room and she has her past books. Go ahead. You have to go out and read these authors if you're a fan of suspense thriller. So, guys, thank you so much for coming on. It was a blast.
Hey, it was awesome to be here. Thanks, John.
All right.
Thanks,
bye, guys. So, Star, your first time co-hosting here, what did you think? Did you have fun? I thought it was a great time. And
I had a great time, John, and I thank you for allowing me to co-chair with you.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll do that again. It was a lot of fun. Great show.
I know. So we got 2 minutes left here, so let's just kind of let people know coming up here on Tuesday, that's August the 10th at 6 p.m., same bat time, we're going to have Andrew Gross, best-selling author Andrew Gross, coming on here with Brett King, author of The Radix, great up-and-coming author is Brett King. They're going to be joining us here Tuesday, August the 10th, right here on Suspense Radio, 6 p.m. Pacific time. So you guys do not want to miss that. Also, suspensemagazine.com, our print version is available for subscription. Go check that out. We are also now available podcast on iTunes. So go check that out. In fact, just go check it out everywhere because that's where we are. We are everywhere.
Everywhere.
You want to know the inside source for suspense, thriller, fiction, horror, mystery, you can come right here to this place right now. Suspensemagazine.com has it all, and we're going to be in a store near you. So, Star, it's great. We're going to go ahead and let's close this up. So, everybody, good night, and we will all see you on Tuesday, August the 10th at 6 p.m.